Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, the weekend edition. Lots to talk about today. There's hot and dry conditions in the Southwest and fire concerns because of that. Also, blizzards going on, so a lot happening. Weather-wise, that winter weather is on the way for some parts of the U.S. Are you prepared for it if you're in those areas? We've got some tips for you on how to do that. Donald Trump's cabinet is taking shape. We'll take a look at some of those gentlemen that are involved in that process. And President Obama is encouraging the anti-Trump protests to continue. More details on the way. Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And we'd appreciate it if you'd follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm or send us an email, and or you can do both. Send an email to comments at kpcg.fm. We appreciate getting those. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon with me here today. We've had a little bit of a weather change here in Oklahoma. It was pretty warm yesterday. We've had some record highs in the 80s, and then all of a sudden now it's dropped down. Still not bad, but it's 50 for a high today, so about a 30-degree swing, I guess.
Yesterday we had a pretty hard wind, but it was somewhat warm, and now we have the same hard wind, and it's very chilly, so quite a big change overnight.
Coming from the north now. Yeah, I went to bed last night. It was a little warm, had the window open, and then I woke up, and I was cold. Had to close those windows.
Cold.
Yeah. It was, but I don't mind it being a little cold. I would prefer to be able to just bundle up with a few blankets as opposed to when it's so hot you can't. What do? Mm-hmm. Turn the air conditioning up higher, I guess. You can't get away from the heat, but you can kind of warm up.
Yeah, I like it a lot better sleeping in the cold because you can bundle up. That's nice.
There is, of course, a lot of dry conditions here in this part of the country. Yesterday in particular was like the highest fire danger, I think, possible, outside of things actually being on fire. Windy, dry, and a lot of that happening. So that's going on in some parts of the country as well. There's drought and arson ignite wildfires across the southeast. This is wildfires throughout the southeast are causing millions of dollars worth of damages, threatening the health and safety of residents. Arson is the suspected cause, according to the authorities. More than 5,000 firefighters and support staff from around the nation have traveled to the southeast to try to contain the blazes. The U.S. Forest Service told the Associated Press the fires are in 7 states right now, kind of on the other side of the country: Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Kentucky, and the Carolinas. And so, and of course, we have them on and off here in this part of the country, too. But they're in the southeast as well. So dealing with some fires out there. And like they said, I mean, it causes quite a bit of damage, millions of dollars. Once they start burning and getting into neighborhoods and things like that, we've had a lot here over the years where you just watch them go and go and go. And I'm always amazed that the firefighters do as good of a job as they do getting those things stopped. Because, you know, sometimes you think, how are they going to stop these things?
Did you say fires caused by arson in 7 states?
Yeah, that's what they think.
Wow, that is quite a destructive ring of arsonists.
Yeah.
Those people need to examine their lives. What are they doing? What's the point?
Yeah, really. I mean, you always feel if somebody starts a fire inadvertently, you know, and it burns, I think they always feel really badly about it, obviously. But those that are doing it on purpose, that's makes no sense. But there's some of that going on. Speaking of intentionally causing fire and blowing things up, we had a story here in Oklahoma City yesterday that got a little national attention. We've been in the headlines here nationally a little bit. Mm-hmm. Not good stories either. Police investigating an explosion in a trash can outside Oklahoma City gas station. Did you see that last night on
the
news? Okay. Yeah, I saw it on the news last night. It was one of the breaking news. There's always breaking news. Sometimes it's more relevant than other times, but they say Oklahoma City police said they received reports of an explosion at around 4 p.m., they reported that witnesses told police they saw someone put something into a trash can at the Shell gas station, and then an explosion was heard. Authorities believe the explosion was intentional. The bomb squad was called to the area to assist the investigation. Police had evacuated a two-block area around the gas station and asked residents to stay inside during their initial investigation. Thankfully, nobody was injured, but they're not sure why that happened. I think it was over near Portland. And somewhere along that stretch of road, if you're familiar with that. So, strange. Don't know what that was all about.
Yeah, that road's about, what, 6 or 7 miles west of here. So, yeah, you can get on that road and go all the way to Oklahoma City. I actually didn't realize it was that close.
Yeah, it's one of those weird roads, too, where it could be a highway or it could be a two-lane road. Just depends on where you are. Yeah. So you really have to pay attention to what's going on.
And there could sometimes be a stoplight.
Right. Just, yeah, 75 and then
what just happened.
Stoplight. Yeah, that's an interesting road. It's one of those where, and you see that sometimes, where you can tell it used to be an area not traveled as much, and then the amount of traffic increased, so they have to change it, but it still is kind of a country road. You know, they put in, of course, a stoplight here not too far from the studio on Bryant Street, and it's still, people aren't quite used to it still, because it used to be a four-way stop, and I still see people go, you know, run the red, because they're thinking it's a four-way. Like, they went, now I'm going to go. I've seen that multiple times. I think people just get it so ingrained, like, oh, this is a four-way, and then all of a sudden it's not. And it's been there for a couple of years, so now people are getting more used to it, but I've seen a lot of people just zip through there not thinking about the fact that it's a stoplight now.
That's the one on Bryant and Covell? Is that the one
you're
talking
about? I think
so, yeah. Yeah, that, and the dangerous part about that one, too, is after you go through it coming from campus going toward town, there's a gigantic hill going down, so you can't really see what's right over the edge.
Right. You have to be really cautious and careful on some of those roadways. So anyway, interesting situation there down in the Oklahoma City area. And yeah, twice this week we've made the national news, and they've both been bad situations.
So. Now no one's going to ever come here.
Nothing. What good happens in Oklahoma City?
We'll keep this wonderland to ourselves, because everyone thinks that nothing but airport shootings and bombings at gas stations happen.
Yeah, they don't always report the good news, I guess.
They don't always report the Thunder beating the Rockets. Things like that.
Yeah, but I suppose the sports always make the national news. Here's an interesting story, a happy ending here from Washington State. Missing Washington State family survives in rugged terrain for 2 days. They were found safe Thursday after hunters spotted them walking along a remote logging road 2 days after they failed to pick up their older kids from school. Jason and Melissa McAllister were out for a drive Tuesday with their 8-month-old and 2-year-old when they got stuck when the road gave way as they tried to maneuver their van around a downed tree in the Mason County area. The dad there, Jason McAllister, he said, "Everybody's good. God's great. Happy to be alive." 33 years old. And they said one of their kids especially was really a trooper through it, their 2-year-old daughter. She was trying to find candy that they had in the van, I guess. So they had something to eat, but the family began to trek back toward the main road about 1 p.m. Tuesday, but stopped as darkness began to set in. They made shelter along the side of the road by leaning fir tree branches against a rock face that protected them from the wind as temperatures plummeted into the 30s. That's always a good idea. It's good to remember that. Those pine branches, they make a good little shelter. He said it actually kept us warm, considering I didn't have a fire going. They recommended that the authorities that found him said, you know, you should probably get a cell phone. He doesn't have a cell phone. But McAllister said he probably won't get a cell phone because there's no service where he lives. But he said he did learn one lesson. He said the next time they're going to take their truck instead of the van. But he's a volunteer firefighter, and he thinks that training helped keep him calm. So, I mean, it's not super long time, but 48 hours out in the wilderness, I mean, that could be pretty terrifying, and it could be deadly.
Yeah, think of those older kids that they didn't pick up from school. They must have either felt really terrified or not very loved because their parents didn't show up.
Oh, that'd be a terrifying feeling, not knowing what happened. But thankfully, they were okay, and they found them there. And those things can happen. You know, you're out for a drive and something goes wrong, especially if it's in a kind of a remote area. And they got me thinking about winter time. We don't have a lot of snow here in Oklahoma, but occasionally we do. And certainly up north, lots of snow they have to deal with. There are blizzards even, I think, going on throughout the weekend potentially. So you always hear about making a winter survival kit. Is that something you guys, being from Wisconsin, we always had that in the car. Did you guys ever do that here?
I'm really poorly equipped. Okay. I have nothing like that.
This is from one of the world's greatest websites, Ready Wisconsin. I have no idea. I just first time I ever looked at it. But they have some tips about how to make a winter survival kit. So we have listeners, of course, all around the world that may have to have something like this. And maybe it's just good in general, too. They say everyone should carry a winter survival kit in their car. In an emergency, it could save your life and the lives of your passengers. Here's what you need. Here's a few things. A shovel. And that is very helpful to shovel you out of drifts. I got stuck actually here in Oklahoma one time.
Wow.
Because we had a pretty heavy snowstorm. And it's one of those things where you can't tell how high the drifts are. And I thought, oh, I'll be fine. And I got stuck. I was half a block from my house. I could see my house, and I couldn't move. My neighbor was a good guy. He came out with a shovel, shoveled out my tires. How embarrassing. I'm like, am I going to have to leave my car here?
Just walk home.
Just walk home.
Don't even bother.
That's when the plow comes through and crushes your vehicle.
Oh, no.
Well, we never have plows come around, but they saw a shovel's a good thing to have for that reason. Windshield scraper and small broom. Everybody needs that. That, you know, that's a major thing even here. It gets cold. If your car's not in a garage, the windows get icy. And you see people driving, and you know they're late for work, so they just have the barest like little patch to look out of. And that's dangerous. You can't see where you're going.
Yeah, that is really dangerous. And you can just tell people are driving completely blind.
Yeah.
Even if it looks like their windows might be somewhat clear, you can tell because it's just the way that they're driving.
And then if it's the sun's just coming up and that sun hits that frosty window, you can't see anything. I had a time years ago when I was driving in Wisconsin, very cold day, and you get all the gunk on the road, like the salt that they put in the sand and the snow, and it all mixes together and just turns into like a sludge. And so it was getting kicked up on my windshield. I was driving in town, and I turned the wipers on to where, you know, the cleaning solution comes out to clean the windshield because I couldn't see. But it was so cold it froze the streaks. And, you know, for like 5 seconds, I couldn't see anything. And you just kind of keep going and hoping that you're okay. But it was a very panicked feeling. Thankfully, it cleared. But that can happen, so you have to be careful with that. And even anywhere you are, having that windshield scraper is a good idea. And I'll give you a free tip, too. I've seen people here in the southern regions where it's not as cold usually, scraping away like a crazy person, and all this effort. Just turn your car on and let it warm up for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes off nice and easy.
That's right.
Now, maybe they don't have time. I don't know, but I always see people doing that, and I think, well, you don't need to put all that effort in. Just let your car warm up a little bit.
That just requires a few minutes of free time before you go to work. If you're in a rush, then it's tough.
You've got what I would do if I have a car outside is if I'm leaving at whatever time, I always plan to go out 10 minutes early and just let the car run. You come out, the car is warm, it's toasty, windshield's nice and good, you're fine. No problem. You don't have to be there. Actually, I shouldn't say that. I think it technically is illegal to have your car running with you not in it, but I don't know. It's my driveway.
Hopefully there's no daring criminal who comes by to try to take the car.
Yeah, well, good luck to him. another thing you should take with you is a flashlight with extra batteries. Always a good idea. A battery-powered radio, water, snack food, including energy bars. And they have a few other items you can bring, like little candy bars and things if you need.
It'd be hard not to run out of those, though. Just even if it's not an emergency, just know that you're hungry and there's something in the trunk.
This, you know, define emergency. I'm pretty hungry right now. they say you should bring matches and small candles, I guess, to set the mood for your candy bar. Extra hat, socks, and mittens. First aid kit with a pocket knife. Necessary medications, blankets or sleeping bag. Tow chain or rope, road salt, sand, or cat litter. You can use that for traction. Booster cables, of course, emergency flares and reflectors, fluorescent distress flag and whistle to attract attention, cell phone adapter to plug into lighter. So that's a pretty extensive list. I don't think we carried most of that stuff, but some of those things aren't a bad idea.
It sounds like a fun camp out just in your car over the weekend sometime during the winter. I might even just try that. if I'm not stranded.
Stage an emergency just to see how it goes. Well, so those are some of the things you should throw in your winter survival kit. And I guess they are potentially having some blizzards up north ways here. So over the weekend, so people probably need those. But it's always interesting, too, because they're ready for it. you know, when they were expecting snow, the plows are ready, and they're pretty good about getting things taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
In order to cancel school when I was growing up, I mean, you had to have really heavy snow, like, when you were going to go to school that day. Otherwise, it was plowed. You could have 3 feet of snow on Sunday. Doesn't matter. Plowed it off. Ready to go to school.
That's the most discouraging thing as a child, yeah. to see them get the roads cleared so quickly when you're absolutely convinced you're getting the day off of school.
Yeah. Well, and for us, because I lived pretty far out in the country, they didn't come all the way out there to check. They were checking the roads in town. And I think in my entire school career, I think I had 3 or 4 days where we had the bus go into the ditch,
oh.
you know, or one time we ran out of gas, which was strange. But
it's unrelated.
The bus driver didn't really live that one down. Yeah. Because we were all like, why did we pull over? And you could tell she was really embarrassed. And she wouldn't say. And we're like, why are we sitting here? And finally, it's like, I ran out of gas. So, I'm not sure
because
why.
Because it's cold outside. That's why.
Well, you know, it was springtime. And that was the problem. It was about 70 out there. And we missed first period.
Oh.
So got to check the gas tank, too. That's another thing, actually, they don't have on this list here, but there's that product heat that you can buy and put in your gas tank. When it gets really cold, keeps the gas from freezing up on you. So there's some things to think about there, but we don't have to deal with it too much down here. It is funny, though, when it snows and everyone kind of gets a little crazy about it. I remember when they were doing a live report because it was snowing locally, and they're like, we're out here and it's snowing. And they zoomed in on the lady's mitten and there was one little snowflake sitting on there. She's like, right here. If you look very carefully, I think this is a... yeah, that's...
Not even joking, right?
No, it's serious.
Wow.
It's always got to be breaking news, but I think that was a little over the top with the one snowflake.
Yeah, here we get a day off school if there's maybe an inch or two of snow on the ground or if the roads are slightly slick in a few places. It doesn't take a whole lot.
No. But a lot of cases, they don't get plowed, and so they are mm-hmm. actually pretty slick, pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
Here is a really just ridiculous story from Heat Street. This is from our good friends over there in the UK. London University students want white lecturers out, ban newspapers from campus. It's just like they're trying to trump each other, forgive the term, in like how crazy can we be? Students from City University of London gathered on Thursday evening to pass motions banning top British newspapers on campus and slammed the university for, quote, reproducing this ideology of whiteness, pledging to, quote, start discussion around the hiring of lecturers and start asking, where are our black lecturers? So they don't want any whites there. That seems racist.
Definitely does. But remember, if it's against white people, it's not racist.
There's a definition I read. I had to read the write-up because it was too tempting. It's from Huffington Post, and they were defining what it means to be a white supremacist. And one of the things they said was somebody who feels that white people are under attack. If you feel that way, that makes you a white supremacist.
Even if they are, which is the case now.
So this is ridiculous, this story here. A motion titled Opposing Fascism and Social Divisiveness in the UK Media claimed British newspapers The Daily Mail, The Sun, and The Daily Express, quote, actively scapegoat the working classes and publish stories that are inherently sexist. It added, quote, freedom of speech should not be used as an excuse to attack the weakest and poorest members of society. I don't think the university students are the weakest and the poorest members of society. It'd probably be those that couldn't afford to go.
It's amazing how usually the university students are the privileged ones, and they complain about everyone else needing to check their own privilege. It's a pretty funny paradox.
They have, of course, these videos, you know, social justice warrior type, where they're all yelling at each other. And two groups yelling. Some group that was sort of conservative and some group that was liberal, and they're fighting about something. And so the one guy that I guess is more conservative, he's yelling about whatever he's thinking. And then the other guy, liberal, starts yelling back at him and says, you know, you're just saying that because you're white and all your white privilege. But the guy that was yelling that was also white. So I didn't quite, like, well, yeah, I mean, but you're white too. But he was standing up, apparently, for those that aren't. I don't know. So there's so much talk about racism. It's really a bitter, bitter thing that they're stirring up. But you see stories like this, and you're like, yeah, that is pretty racist, but it's racist against whites.
It really is. And they're asking the question, where are the black professors or the people coming on campus to lecture? I don't think anyone's actively barring black lecturers from coming over. It's a matter of, you know, the mind. It's not a matter of the color. It's a matter of the mind. Who is qualified to be a lecturer, whatever race, will be a lecturer on your campus. I don't think it matters the skin color at all.
No, I don't think that really factors in too much, except for the fact that they do, at least in the U.S., try to make it, you know, affirmative action, mm-hmm. where a lot of people, they try to balance out the races.
And that's actually racist as well.
In a lot of cases, yeah. Because it's not always about who's the most qualified. But, I don't know what their percentage of their instructors are. They didn't say. But in most colleges, you'll find a wide variety of people. I've never seen it be one way or the other.
I doubt they're saying there's not a single black lecturer, so it kind of negates what they're even complaining about.
Yeah, it's the ideology of whiteness. I don't even know
what is that. Please let me know.
I'm not sure what that is. But anyway, so that's going on over there in the UK. And, of course, they're just taking their cue from what's going on over here in the U.S. as the campuses just get into more and more of that. Even it's even happening down in grade schools and middle schools. And, you know, and I think in most cases, as I've mentioned before, I don't think even most people out there protesting really care about it. It's just a chance to get out of school and bang a drum. I went to school. I mean, I'm not stupid. I do know that, hey, we can get out of class. Yeah, sure. I'm all in.
I'll protest if it means sure. I can get a day off. Right. That's just how people do it. And it's funny because probably 70 to 80%, even a lot of liberals in both countries probably think that these kids are being ridiculous. It would be just the most wonderful thing if any school that had things like this happen just got shut down, and then see if maybe they would stop complaining if they knew their school would get shut down.
Yeah, it's really really getting pretty wild there. And you got a story later where it's getting promoted from the top levels, and we'll talk about that. Here's an interesting one. This ties in a little bit to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today. This is from Bloomberg. Rise of populism tops anxiety list at Frankfurt banking meeting. So they've been having had this meeting over there, and they say the rise of populism in developed nations is tearing at the political fabric of Europe. Europe's paying attention to what's happening with Brexit and with Donald Trump being elected, and they're a little nervous about it. They say the uncertainty in the market, especially the political and economic instability, has never been as pronounced as it is today, according to Martin Zelke. He's one of the people at the meeting. He said, we don't want to go down the path of nationalism. Britain's vote to leave the European Union and Donald Trump's surprise victory in the U.S. presidential elections have fueled concerns that nationalism and populism are gaining a dimension that may turn anti-EU parties into a dominant force across the continent. So they're somewhat concerned about that, and they see what's happening in UK and here in the U.S., and they're kind of worried about what's going to happen to their system over there.
Again, the elites who are out of touch with reality are upset that the majority of people want to change and that their power would be taken away. That's almost always what it is. That's why people here in the political system are so upset about Donald Trump being elected president. They don't want their power to disappear. They don't want the people to reject what they have been setting over them for all these years.
Yeah, and as it's pointed out in the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, I mean, the reaction over there also is pushing them to become more unified in a sense, at least those that are really in with them. And Germany, of course, at the lead of that. They can they trust the U.S. anymore? Can they trust their allies of the past, if you want to call them that? They're a little nervous about that. So it's pushing them to kind of come together, especially when they hear talk of, you know, the U.S. becoming more isolationist and trade, you know, trying to restructure trade deals and things like that. A lot going on behind the scenes, I'm sure. But pretty interesting. So more of that's on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and we'll mention that here in a minute. I'm always amazed by people that have a lot of wild, exotic animals in their house. And I think, why do you do that? So, of course, this is happening. More than a dozen exotic animals living in unacceptable conditions at Nevada home. unacceptable conditions. What would be acceptable conditions? To get refrigerator and TV access?
Is a home not good enough for animals? It's good enough for human beings.
These animals shouldn't probably be in somebody's house. And that's how they always end up at these animal refuge places where we all pay money to go look at the lion. You know, and then they always tell you the story like, well, somebody bought this lion and realized, you know, 3 months into it that you can't have a lion in your house. I thought that was kind of basic knowledge, but they say authorities in Nevada were investigating a possible case of animal cruelty Wednesday after reports of exotic animals living in unacceptable conditions. And again, would it have been okay if they seemed happy? You know, oh, you got a lion in there? That seems happy. You shouldn't be allowed to do that. Nye County Sheriff's deputies and Nevada Division of Wildlife officers converged on a home in Pahrump and found several lions, tigers, and an illegal species of fox at the house. An illegal species of fox? I don't know anything about that.
An illegal fox? How?
Must have been from Mexico. I don't know why.
It crossed the border illegally.
It's illegally here. How can it be illegal?
I don't know. It exists. Just for existing, it's illegal.
It's trying to spread that illegal fox ideology that's so rampant. Colleges are trying to put it down. Officials found animals locked in bedrooms and, of course, some other gross things that you would expect there. Deputies also found a Canadian Siberian lynx, which doesn't need a permit in Nye County, of course. And a fennec fox, which is a violation of state code to have. They sat down and they said, "What can people in this county have? What about that Canadian Siberian lynx? That's fine. Fennec fox? No. We have to put our foot down somewhere."
The lynx sounds a lot more exotic and possibly dangerous to me.
I was just imagining going over to this person's house and you say, "You know, could I use your restroom?" And you know, sure. Well, where is it? It's down the hall, third door. Don't go into those other rooms. Because there's, you know, lions in
there. Of all times, make sure you don't pick the wrong door.
Don't go into that room. You don't want to go in there. Authorities said in total they found 15 animals. Well, this is the way they actually wrote it, which is funny. Authorities said in total they found 15 animals in total. Oh, well, there you go.
Just poor rushed editing.
They were hurrying to get this story out. 8 Canadian Siberian lynx hybrid cats, 2 African lionesses, an African lion, a Bengal tiger, a black panther, a fennec fox, and several caracal hybrid cat. Oh, sorry, and a serval caracal hybrid cat. I don't know what that is. I thought they misspelled several, but no, it was a different word. So the police are looking into that. Can you imagine that? Your next door neighbors got all this stuff in their house.
It must be a really wealthy person. Those animals probably don't come cheap.
Well, you know what's so strange about that? Typically, it seems like these people, you know, kind of are living in shabby conditions. And I don't know what the income level is, but usually they seem like they're not doing great. But then they're spending how much ever on, like, a lion cub. Actually, I didn't know the person, but I was one of those, you know, I knew a guy who knew a guy. Well, he was telling me about his buddy who he worked with at, I think it was a gas station years ago. And you know, the guy didn't have a lot of money. He was kind of not a great job. But he'd spent $500 on buying, like, you know, cubs of exotic animals. That was his thing. It was like his hobby.
Wow. So this person in Nevada, was it?
Yeah.
Is not too wealthy. You can just tell by the pictures.
Well, just based upon the conditions in the house and everything, I would assume they were not doing great. But I mean, it's hard to say.
I always think of someone like Mike Tyson with his own tiger or something like that.
Right. He had it in his house. Yeah, so they had all these animals in there, so of course somebody did that. And you can probably see these animals in a refuge near you pretty soon and hear the story. I want to see the fox. I'm going to actually look that up. Fennec, a fennec fox, is illegal in that county. I don't even know. Yeah, I don't know anything about that.
It must be extremely dangerous if they're going to single that one out over the lynx.
How did they keep the lions in the bedrooms? Wouldn't they, like, just broke? My cat can open my bedroom door. He just pushes on it with his head. Yeah. It's a lion. You'd think they'd figure out, like, I'm just going to bust his door down.
Probably house trained.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know how close they live to anybody else. Maybe they were way out in the country or something. But, you know, if you're sitting there and all of a sudden you hear, like, lions roaring coming out of your
Ooh.
You know, you'd be like, are they watching Jungle Book over there? Like, what are they doing?
Sounds so realistic.
Who's making those lion sounds? So, yeah, anyway, some wild animals going on there in Nevada. And, of course, that's something that is happening. Kia David program's coming up this weekend. We have a brand new episode that's on television in the U.S. and Canada. You can also hear it here on KPCG. And you can get it online at kpcg.fm as well. What is Human Nature? Make sure you listen for that. And that, of course, is a new program, and there's a lot of archived ones as well. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England, is coming up this weekend also, and talked about Europe coming together more and more in response to Brexit and the U.S. presidential election, and we talked about that here just a little while ago. And also, he mentions the upside-down world in the U.S., where the media is accusing Trump supporters of violence while the real violence is happening on the other side. And he mentioned some of the things that we had touched on the other day, too, where there are actual examples of people attacking Trump supporters. And then on the other side, they say they're afraid of violence, but there haven't been any reports that I've heard of that are real.
It's hard to even imagine the media taking themselves seriously at this point, because they know that if it was a Hillary supporter getting assaulted and beaten to within an inch of his life, then they'd be all over it. They'd be reporting it for days. And they're not doing it just because the Trump supporters are the ones being attacked.
Yeah, and the examples, like the false examples that have come up, like that lady that claimed she was attacked and somebody stole her hijab and her purse or something. And she said, you know, well, they were all wearing Donald Trump hats. Well, of course they were. That turned out the story was
false.
Has
there even been one proven instance of Trump supporters attacking anybody? They've claimed a few times that that those supporters have maybe said things that other people didn't like. But even then, if you just look on in the streets of any big city, you're going to find plenty of things that people are saying on the radical left that others might not like.
Yeah, I haven't seen any reports. I've seen a few where they've claimed, you know, that Trump supporters were saying some inappropriate things, and they've got videos. And it probably happens, but at the same time, a lot of those videos, it's at these protests where there's both sides there, and everybody's yelling crazy stuff. So, mm-hmm. I mean, who are you going to single out? It's a bad deal.
Yeah, and these Trump protesters are unbelievably vulgar. I mean, just some of the signs that they hold up, you want to unsee, but you can't, that they have such disgusting things on them.
Trump supporters?
No. The other Trump protesters.
Right. Yeah. Trump protesters, right. Yeah. And of course, it always goes both ways to some extent. You're going to find that in any group, but yeah, you do see it, I think, more on the left side for sure, at least I have. Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, this weekend edition. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon with you here. Abraham Blondeau stopping by as well today. And make sure that you do follow us on Twitter at KPCGFM. And also you can send us emails, questions, comments, concerns, etc. You can send those to comments@kpcg.fm. And Abraham, one of the things that's going on is Donald Trump's cabinet is getting formed. And there's a story the other day about they're watching the elevators or the doors there at Trump Tower to see the big players that are coming and going. And so he's come out now with a few people that are officially, I guess, in the cabinet. They've accepted. This write-up is from Bloomberg. Trump said to tap Mike Pompeo to head CIA. I don't know much about Mike Pompeo. What's his story?
So Mike Pompeo, he's a senator from Indiana, I believe, and his main claim to fame, I guess, has been opposing immigration mm-hmm. and that sort of thing, at least in a legislative sense. But he has some controversial history with people accusing him of saying racially insensitive things as well. So that's some of the history with him being ahead, or with his political history, I should say. So with a head of the CIA, that would, he does seem like he'd be more in favor of a lot of Trump's policies, and it might take the organization in a different direction.
Yeah, the little bit I've seen about him, and then there's a few other names that are coming up for other posts, the liberal media is going crazy. You know, they're just really going after these guys on some of these allegations, like you said, of making comments or whatever the case might be. So they're not happy. I don't know. Again, I don't know a lot about these different individuals, but he is bringing in a lot of people that are known. You know, that's for sure. Like, I think with President Obama, some of the people he brought in, you're like, who's this guy? Like, where is he from?
Right.
Like Van Jones. Like, he couldn't even stick around because he was so communist. I mean, right, he even admitted he's a communist. Right.
Right, yeah.
So it is interesting just to see the way the media is attacking these guys, and yet I don't remember a whole lot being said about it 8 years ago when some of these avowed communists were coming on board.
Right, yeah. It's really interesting seeing the cabinet come together because there's been story after story and how the Trump transition team is tearing itself apart through arguing and people getting fired, etc. But when you actually look at the people coming together, they're pretty prestigious, a lot of highly qualified people. And I think what's also interesting is it seems like it right now for Secretary of Defense, it seems to be two former generals in the who are being considered, and they are James Mattis and Jack Keane. James, they're both retired 4-star generals. They both have spotless records. Jack Keane fought in the Vietnam War. He led different army divisions and has a lot of different awards for bravery, Silver Stars, Bronze Stars. James Mattis, he was a Marine general. He fought in Iraq, Afghanistan, and he served as a chief of Central Command under President Obama for a short time. And he ran into a lot of disagreements with President Obama because Mattis favored aggressive action against Iran. And so...
That'll be the headline, all right? You know,
right.
They're going to try to undo the great Iran deal.
Yeah.
And the paradise will end.
Peace in our time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but it's interesting that these two generals who have pretty spotless records could become Secretary of Defense, and that would bring some serious credibility, but also probably a more hawkish policy towards American foreign policy in the Middle East, maybe.
Yeah. You know, and anytime somebody comes in, I mean, they should be vetted pretty well. And I don't have any issue with the media saying, okay, let's take a look at these guys' records. But do it objectively. That's the thing. The narrative's already there for a lot of the media sites, which are very liberal, which is they're all racist and they hate immigrants. And they're just slotting everybody into that and looking over the course of their public record and saying, well, they said that one thing that one time, you remember? You know, I'm like, well, okay, fair enough, but what about everything else, too? If people can't see the obvious bias, I think everybody can. That's why people don't trust the media. But I just get sick of it. If you want to talk about what they did, great. That'd be good to know. But just accusing them, I get tired of that.
Yeah. I follow some pro-Hillary people on Twitter. They're historians, intellectuals, conservative columnists. And it's really interesting, a lot of them, what they tweet, and they're really just following this media frenzy. They say things that Trump's cabinet is going to be a bunch of white nationalists, white racists. It's full of diversity because they all hate different minority groups, things like that.
Oh, wow.
And, I mean, you're not even giving them a fair chance to begin with to actually do well for your country. And that's the thing that we're seeing, I think, with this media is that they're putting their own opinions, reputations, or just crazed ideology is above the good of the country. And when that happens, there's going to be some major ramifications for that because you have to put your country above yourself. And when, as a organization, as the media who have the duty to the people to give us information, when they fail to do that, a lot of things might start falling apart.
You know, it kind of reminds me of, you know, if you look at, say, school kids, where sometimes kids will get in a group and they'll pick on one kid. And they pick on him and pick on him, and eventually something bad happens. And then everyone says, well, we were just kidding. Or, you know, we weren't that serious about it. I kind of feel that way about the media. Like, they keep saying things that aren't true to stir the pot, and then when something blows up, what are they going to say? Oh, we didn't totally mean that. We were kind of kidding around. they're going to be responsible for what they're, the things that they're saying. And they, to come out and accuse people of being these very vulgar things, you know, racist and this and that, they're throwing that around so casually, so carelessly. They're going to regret it, I think, because people will believe what they say. And that's why you can't lie.
Yeah, or it will come back to haunt them later as people look at their record and vet them in the future. So it's just a vicious cycle. And as you said, it just causes a lot of distrust, confusion. And that's what misinformation does. It creates enough doubt in people where they won't support something, or where the integrity of institutions are compromised. And we're seeing that with the American government, where before they're even nominated, before they even have a chance to say what they're going to do, they're already demonized. So when they do have the authority to actually put into practice certain policies, they'll be so undermined that it doesn't matter what they'll do, it will end up being a failure, in whether it is in reality or in the eyes of the media. And so your nation just can't win with this kind of bickering.
No, you can't be unified at all. And this ties into our next story here that Grant has. This was mentioned somewhat on the Trump Daily radio show today too, but it's from Fox News. It's really an important story because, you know, you remember after the election, President Obama came out and he gave some, you know, give him a chance and let's all work together and blah, 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 even though he'd been very vicious before that. Well, now this headline from Fox News, Obama to anti-Trump protesters, march on.
What it's unbelievable. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a huge contrast to the way Donald Trump approached a couple of those fabricated stories about his supporters harassing Hillary Clinton supporters. In that CBS 60 Minutes interview on Sunday, he looked straight into the camera and he said, "Stop it." He said that to his own supporters. Here, Mr. Obama is basically saying, "No one should be silenced. Go ahead." He's talking to the people who are marching in the streets with all these foreign flags. You won't find an American flag anywhere,
right?
But just go ahead and keep making your voice heard. And the unspoken part of it is that he's also fine with the violent aspects.
Yeah, and he's encouraging it. He's absolutely encouraging it. I mean, you don't have to read between the lines. And speaking of different flags, there was a story today about how one school district, I think it was in Nebraska, wouldn't let the kids fly the American flag because they were too worried that they would cause problems. Problems? In America? What flag do you want to? You want to put the rainbow flag up? What flag do you want to fly? This is the country. If you can't fly, they talk about on the other side about being afraid of everything. If you're too afraid to fly your own flag in your own country, that's a problem.
Yeah, it just shows you the dominant force that kind of the radical left has become, where if you show anything resembling patriotism or pride in your own heritage, then you're bullied and harassed and told to shut up. And that's kind of why they're even afraid to fly the American flag. Yeah. On American soil.
Well, it's being labeled, you'd be labeled as a white supremacist, right?
Right.
So that's what the media is saying. And that's really, what are they protesting, these protesters? They're protesting this false narrative of racism. And everyone's going to be kicked out of the country and all these things, which are not true. But that's what they're stirring up. And then to have the president come out and say, well, you know, I'd say keep on protesting. Mm-hmm. Really? I don't think he took too kindly to people protesting him. I remember the Tea Party? Boy, they got lambasted for protesting policies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty hypocritical. He was saying these things yesterday in Germany with Angela Merkel, and basically he said this: "I suspect that there's not a president in our history that hasn't been subject to these protests." As if what's going on in our big cities right now is completely normal. As if every time there's an election that people disagree with, they set cities on fire. I don't remember that ever happening.
Nope, I don't either. I've seen a few elections. I don't recall it ever occurring. I remember it being like, huh, okay, new president. All right, go to work the next day, go to school. Things move on. I don't remember a bunch of rioting.
Yeah, the only time... Because I've been researching this for an article. The only time that there were riots like this or something comparable to this was when Ulysses Grant was made president, and the South did not like that at all, obviously, because they were under occupation from the Union. Or also there were some like racial protests through the late 1800s, 1920s, 1930s, but nothing really like this, where you have a president encouraging someone to protest an incoming president. That's unprecedented. And what's interesting, too, is if you consider President Obama's background, he was a community organizer. He pretty much was a professional protester. That's not what he might call himself, but that's the kind of people he associated himself with, activists, community organizing, that kind of politics. So this, what they're doing is right in his wheelhouse of what he was doing as a younger person, or what he would organize in Chicago, what his mentors taught him to do as well. So even with this protesting, you can see this is right in his version of politics.
Yeah, and he even said that in this story, didn't he, that they need to organize,
right,
and protest.
Yeah, he said voting matters, organizing matters, and being informed on the issues matter. So saying that being informed on the issues matters is like saying that these rats in our big city streets are just, you know, they're the ones who are informed. They're the right. ones who are educated, and everyone else who is a Trump supporter is obviously a bigot.
Yeah, well, I'll translate that for you. Be informed about the issues means hear what I tell you and believe it and do it.
Mm-hmm.
The issues? Oh, please. What issues? They're fabricated issues? That's crazy talk.
Yeah, then he also said, hopefully it's a reminder that elections matter and voting counts. So at least this, in this way, he's kind of criticizing the people in the streets who didn't even bother to vote for Hillary Clinton if they're going to be so upset about Donald Trump winning.
Yeah, which a lot of people have been exposed for that. A lot of the protesters, even, as we talked about, like half of them that were arrested in Oregon didn't even register to vote. They're protesting the results.
Well, you know, hey, it is what it is.
Well, I think this is embarrassing, too, that the leader of the free world has to talk about the basic pillars of democracy in a foreign country, in Germany, of all places, and he has to defend democracy, and he has to address just protests about a presidential election. Like, to me, this is just really embarrassing, and it's something that is shameful to America that we even have to talk about the most basic principles of democracy on the world stage, defend them or not defend them. And to leaders who are trying to figure out what the future of the world is going to be here in Germany and Europe and that sort of thing. And it's just, I don't know, just a sad thing to see happening on the world stage.
Well, and two, it wasn't but a week or so ago, maybe a little more, where President Obama kind of scolded Donald Trump and said, well, he has to realize that gestures matter and words matter when you're a president. Does he think this matters? Is he going to take responsibility? Is he going to pay the bill for somebody's broken car and busted window and burned down, you know, whatever?
No, and really a lot of that is as a result of what Mr. Obama said, saying that he's, I believe, uniquely unqualified for the office. If people think he's uniquely unqualified for the office, they're going to be very upset when he wins, right?
Right. And to say something like that, oh, come on. When he got elected, what were the qualifications?
Nothing.
He wasn't vetted at any level.
He hadn't accomplished anything. He was never vetted. The media fell in love with him, and they were almost in a trance anytime they were around him. And he's talking about Mr. Trump being unqualified, just
right.
The height of hypocrisy. He also, this is unbelievable, he advised Mr. Trump not to take a real politic approach with Mr. Putin, which I believe is a term that is talking about something with communism, real politics. So he's basically saying that Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin are in bed together.
Well, what has been our policy with Russia over the last few years? Surrender?
Right.
Just abject surrendering?
Reset button, red line.
Yeah.
Both of those things being repeatedly abused. And he's saying that we have to continue in that same course instead of possibly realizing that we've made mistakes and changing.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. And you would think, you would hope that there would have been, you know, he would have said that's enough, stop the mm-hmm. protesting. But nope, because he's telling the truth here. He wants it. Doesn't he? Isn't that what he's saying? Oh, sure, he's not going to come out and say it exactly that way, but that's in effect what he's saying, and everybody mm-hmm. knows it.
Right. Yeah, Mr. Obama took one final shot here about how social media can erode a democracy. He said, if we are not serious about facts and what is true and what is not, particularly in an age of social media, when people are getting their information in sound bites and snippets, if we cannot discriminate between serious arguments and propaganda, then we have problems. This is from the man in charge of an administration who prioritized Twitter and Facebook over giving any information to the actual media.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fascinating case study, and I will accuse you of what I do.
And then see if anyone actually believes him, which tons of people are.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, Ben Rhodes strikes again. So I don't know if he wrote that speech, but someone, some fiction writer must be writing those ones.
Yeah, and people are believing it. Like, oh, wow, that sounds great. That's not true. None of that is.
Yeah, so there's just such the comments that he made there in Germany yesterday just struck me as extremely condescending and subtle, where he's not outright saying Mr. Trump is best friends with Mr. Putin, but he's basically saying that by the advice he gives. He's basically saying Mr. Trump won the election via Twitter and all these other crazy assertions. And then he's saying, I would not advise the people on the streets who probably don't have jobs and are just probably even a lot of them being paid to protest and riot. He said he wouldn't even advise them to be silent.
Yep, not a good situation. I just wonder what he's going to do after he's out of office. You know, I would imagine more of these things pop up, more sound bites, more Twitter, more tweets, etc., that are just encouraging this type of behavior. Yeah. And it's undermining the police. It's undermining authority on every level. And it's causing problems. So we'll see how it goes. It doesn't seem like it's going to get any better. At least he's not trying to make it get better.
Yeah, I hope he chooses a nice safe spot in Chicago to build his presidential library. Because the way that city's going, I'll have to build it.
It's a sanctuary
behind
city.
The wall or something like that.
Well, and that's the thing. We've talked about that before. It's easy to have a bunch of rhetoric and talk, but what about the people on the ground level that have to live in these communities and deal with some of these things that happen? That's a whole different story because you have to deal with the results of it. So I thought it was just a pretty unbelievable story. And again, that's from Fox News. You can read the rest of that there. Obama to anti-Trump protesters, march on.
And what's happened ever since the election? The media has gone absolutely above and beyond to portray Mr. Obama as possibly the most dignified president ever, always handling conflicts and meetings with grace and class and dignity. And I don't remember much of that the last 8 years, but that's how it's being portrayed now.
I saw one headline called him No Drama Obama.
Yeah, no drama. Even though he takes cheap shots at Republicans every chance he can get.
Well, and then we talked about earlier, Donald Trump met with Abe yesterday, right? And so, and the comment that Abe made after the fact from Japan was, "But this is a man I can work with." Now, you know, take it for what it's worth. Who knows? They say what they say. But then I saw some media headlines where they said, it was an absolute disaster. I'm like, well, I don't know. That's not what he said. I mean, it was an absolute disaster. I remember a few in the last 8 years that have been actual absolute disasters. Mm-hmm. I could, you know, we could name off probably 10 off the top of our heads, including, Netanyahu having to walk up by the garbage dump out of the back of the building. Yeah, other things such as that. So, again, it's just so skewed. It's just upside down. And that's one of the things that's really highlighted on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today. We had a Trumpet cover years ago, Upside Down World. Mm-hmm. It, up is down is up, true is false, false is true. One other little quick story to just mention in passing that kind of ties into that. This is an unbelievable thing. Minnesota woman sues her own child and state agencies over a sex change treatments. 17-year-old, I believe it was a boy who wanted to be a girl. I can't remember. It was one way or the other.
Gets really confusing.
And they went ahead and they did it, gave the kid narcotics and all kinds of other things. Mom never knew about it, didn't tell her. And they said, well, too bad. Can you believe that? I mean, that's the world we're living in. And people wonder why things aren't going great. Well, what kind of a world is that?
That's kind of the end result of the government saying that they have ultimate responsibility caring for our own children. Whenever it's the government's job instead of the parents' job, then they feel like they're justified in doing things behind the parents' backs.
This place up there in Minnesota, Park Nicolet, Minneapolis, Gender Services and Fairview provided the teen medical treatment for sex change from male to female. and prescribed narcotics. Narcotics. And the services were paid for through the Public Health and Human Services Department. School district said, well, the person's 17 years old. They're an adult. None of your business.
Thought it was 18.
Maybe they got a year older in the surgery or something.
Apparently.
Yeah, I don't know what the laws say about that particular thing, but when a 17-year-old can make decisions like that, that's just one of the most highly irresponsible parts of our society. Because, I mean, that's why children can't make decisions like that, because they don't know what they're doing. And number one, well, that's number one. Number two is that the government is taking, like Grant mentioned, that's a communist approach, mm-hmm. to child rearing. The parents have control over their children. The government cannot interfere in that sort of thing, because that's just violation of basic human rights.
Well, I did a few things at 17 I wouldn't do now.
Definitely.
But thankfully they weren't on that level.
Yeah.
Man, unbelievable. Well, that's some of the things going on. Wish there was more good news, but there's not a lot of it out there. But got to talk about it, because that's what's happening in this world. Hopefully you have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. New Key of David, Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and Trumpet Hour Week in Review program coming up this weekend. And also the debut of Watch Jerusalem as well. Make sure you check the schedule for that. All that and more coming up on KPCG.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.